Good evening, everyone. This is the Glen Allen School District 41 Board of Education regular meeting, February 24, 2014. Time is 7:32. The meeting will now come to order. Mr. Kenwood, thanks for joining us. Will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure, I'll rise. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Here.
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 Public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. Personal complaints or criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present tonight that would like to address the board at this time? Okay. Mr. Cooper, whenever you're ready.
Jeff Cooper, Glen Allen. Dr. Gordon, it's been 8 months since you started and told me to hold you responsible for spending since July 1. The bird dropping started on the first day of school, with $2,000 wasted on Mike Tricksters, thousands and thousands to speakers on institute days, over 5,000 more to the Consortium for Education, where our recently retired superintendent works. We still have administrators and teachers going to conferences near and far, hundreds of dollars in a craft, flights, hotels, cars, food. Speaking of trips, the last time I was here, I mentioned the $3,000 spent on going to Colorado to try to reinvent the wheel. Despite that, parents, stakeholders had already weighed in on STEAM, STEM, and your other assorted acronyms. It wasn't enough this one trip. Now there is a second one. How many thousands more will be spent on this? It appears that the term "hold me responsible" is not to be confused with being fiscally responsible. As most of your staff, you don't have any skin in the game. What is spent here doesn't affect your personal tax bill. So please don't tell me to hold you responsible. I learned years ago, growing up in a big city, the phrase "actions speak louder than words." Your loud actions are hurting my ears and my checkbook. On the subject of holding someone responsible, Mr. Board President, let's line up the issues. One, the green line. Two, the workout club benefit and the administrator's contracts. Any answers tonight on these subjects? How about the new assistant principal's contract for next year? You know, the one that's supposed to be costing the taxpayers nothing, no new money. A real answer would be refreshing about next year. And Mr. Board President, since you are interested in how other boards handle our public participation, as with District 87, I suggest that you check last week's Glen Allen Park District meeting, a board that actually listens to and encourages its public to be involved. Also a board that allows its members to all be heard on issues, not just as one voice silliness. Very unlike here.
Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Stecker, anyone else?
Jennifer.
Are you ready, Jen?
Hi, yeah. I'm Jennifer Rath. I'm a parent at Lincoln. I'm also a teacher with more than 20 years of experience. I was at the finance meeting last time on February 10th, and I was intrigued with the discussion on 2 points. Mainly adjusting class size targets for the 2014-15 school year. Honestly, I got a little angry at the fact that you're thinking of increasing the class size target for second grade, not level 2, by only 1 to 3 students. I know on the surface this does not look like much of an increase. However, last year when the whole think tank thing was going down, 3 board members, 2 of which are still right here, promised me that the think tank plan would not negatively affect any class size for any grade level. Now they're being increased ostensibly due to the fact that you're going to follow through with phase two of your plan, which is combining 2 to 3 for literacy, among other things. I'm not sure if you're exactly following through with that phase because I misunderstood at this board meeting. A member had stated back in August that feedback would be collected and conversations would be had before phase two was implemented. Other board members have told me privately that there is a strong possibility that 2-3 will not be next year. We are waiting on a teacher-parent survey to be completed, as well as the listening tours. I understand that both the listening tours and surveys of results will be done in April, so I'm not sure why you're planning on voting on this tonight before hearing the results of the survey and listening tours. I'm not sure why the surveys and listening tours weren't done earlier in the school year or with more frequency. This seems a little bit backwards. There seems to be a disconnect between what is being reported here at board meetings and what is actually going on out in the field of the classroom. My son started the school year with 28 students in his literacy class at Lincoln. But looking at these guidelines that were passed out last February 10th, it should have been 25 to 27 due to not making AYP. He has been getting a fifth grade literacy curriculum this year and social studies, and next year it will cycle back to fourth grade. Another backwards thing that I can't quite wrap my head around. The second thing that was discussed were the fees, the registration fees. And I understand schools need to pay registration fees, but we pay exorbitant property taxes. And the other thing that wasn't mentioned at all at the business meeting were the supply fees that we need to pay. I have two kids. At back-to-school time in August, I paid over $300 in back-to-school supplies. And not just pencils and erasers and backpacks, but whiteboard markers and 8 boxes of Kleenex for my fourth grader and Clorox wipes. And, you know, $300 for two kids plus the registration fees is a little tough on some people in this town. So I would just ask you to consider that.
Jen, that's time. Could you sum up?
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just to clarify a little bit, we're not voting, we're not taking action on anything tonight. There's numerous things up for discussion this evening, but there's nothing up for action.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay.
Sam, may I clarify in terms of response? I know that we say this at the start of most meetings, but as there's new people that come in and out, and as a comment was made by Mr. Cooper as he left, it is that public comment is public comment. I take notes. I think most of us take notes. When there's a response, we, as you say, make sure that we get back to board members, board members get back, or Dr. Gordon will. So I just want to clarify that, the framework of this business meeting, it's to take in information and respond, and some of the responses from emails this week will be discussed tonight, so I'm glad that folks are here, and hopefully people will listen to the board meeting too.
Thanks. Okay, moving on. Presentations, reports, initiatives. There are no presentations, reports this evening, so we'll go right on to the action items. The consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like to remove from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay, hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes the human resources, personnel reports, employment recommendations, resignation and retirement, and internal transfer report, which is the blue updated copy that we should all have in front of us, the finance, facilities, and operations report, including the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property report, the 2013-2014 FOIA report, and other matters, including approval of the board meeting minutes from the February 10, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting and the February 10, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting closed session, the semi-annual review of the closed session minutes, and the destruction of closed session audio recordings. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second. By Mrs. Nelson. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. The 2014 classroom furniture bid. At its February 10 meeting, the Board of Education discussed the administration's recommendation for the continuation of the classroom furniture refresh, which includes the solicitation of bids for 21st century classroom furniture for 24 more elementary classrooms, 6 classrooms at each of the 4 elementary schools. The total estimated cost is $273,600. We have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Escalante.
Second.
Second by Mr. Vichensky. Any discussion?
Well, I know one of the questions that I asked, and I think somebody else asked last time, was that we have only, 12 additional classrooms to be completed. You know, we had asked Bob about that. Certainly the furnishings are, they're portable, they're going to fit with, the district as we move forward. Why not do it? And I was comfortable with the response in terms of wanting, number one, to look at dollars, and this is a part of the budget that was built out, but also to leave some flexibility in terms of what might be needed or what might be needed differently. So I'm comfortable with that. I just wanted to make sure that we're not missing out on some cost savings or some bundling of costs, and we talked about that too.
Any other comments, questions? I have the same question, concern.
Yeah.
I still feel that we should probably do all of them this year, but again, I get the rationale. I don't necessarily have to agree with it, but if that's what you all are saying, then I guess that's the way to go. So I not only would I like to do this, I'd like to do the additional 12 this summer. But if this is the way we're going to go, that's the way we're going to go.
I understand the flexibility, please.
Okay, anybody else?
My question that I've put my voice to Bob is, what is the functional utility of these in terms of, how long will they last? My concern is the beanbag chair sitting apparatus. Are those good for 3, 4, 5 years? And is it really make sense? Based on how long their useful lives are. So, but Bob was going to get me some information.
The last the equipment that we have in our elementary buildings now was really came in about 1997, 98. So it's 12, 14, 15 years old. That's rather typical for school furnishing, for classroom furniture.
But the newer
stuff, I would expect it to last equally as long.
Okay.
Including the beanbag.
Well, things. I don't know about the beanbag, but...
Mm-hmm. But that's not a major aspect of this.
Table, desk, chair, table, I would expect to last 10 plus years.
Yeah. And just a little history on that. I know when they were first presented to the board as potential use, one here in the library, that type of thing, that we were reminded that the beanbag that we have in our head of this vinyl thing filled with white whatever is not what we're purchasing. It's all industrial, school-based. Right. It's public school. Yeah. It's a different thing.
Beanbag hand?
Yeah. So, fair question, because we want to make sure.
I know Bob said that you replaced one of the beanbag chairs.
Yes.
So it leads me to beg the question.
Yeah.
What's
I'm assuming if we see them not lasting for the life expectancy, then we make a different decision in terms of replacing them.
Right.
We're not
going to
put good money out.
But the kids like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of this was, again, just historically, that there was conversation around some of our students with IEPs or special needs or sensory issues, that part of being in a regular classroom was also being able to use some of these other tools. So, some of it are the seats that have the texture to them. The Hokey seats that move are used by certainly all of the students, but even more so by students who need to have some sensory movement. So, part of it was also being conscious of implementing some for both, for all level students, all types of students in the classroom. So, it was a little bit broader view of how do we engage students, how do we provide comfort for them, mm-hmm. you know, so they can focus. So that was a different approach.
Okay, anybody else? Roll call, please, Mrs. Stark.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochanski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion passes. Superintendent's report.
Thank you. First, I want to thank the board members, staff, and some parents for their well wishes for my wife, who had surgery today. Just really appreciate all the support, all the thoughts, the texts throughout the day. It meant a lot. Just continue to appreciate all the support that comes from this team and my staff. It means a lot. This next piece is a donation from an anonymous parent that I don't have on my earlier email to you. It's a fairly large donation, and again, the parent wants to remain anonymous. I'm just going to read this statement. I'm very pleased to tell you that a donor who wishes to remain anonymous is making an extremely generous donation to Churchill School. The donor wishes the funds to be used to provide enrichment opportunities and build community among students in hopes that others will be inspired to support their schools through voluntary donations. The school administration and donor work together to review various options and would like to start at first grade with a Lego education program called Story Starter. The initial donation of $10,000 will cover related teacher training as well as in-school and after-school activities. If this program is a success, the donor would like to fund expansion to all grades with a total of donation of up to $50,000. Because this is a restricted gift, meaning it is to be put toward an identified purpose, we would like board approval of this overall plan. We will then set up the appropriate accounts and financial processes and communicate with the Churchill parents. I met with these parents early on and could not believe it. Their incredible generosity and really about making a difference for the students at Churchill. They were very sincere from the first day all the way through, and I'm excited that they've been able to land on the Story Starter project for their donation. I'll bring this to the full board for action next March 24th.
Wow.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was like, what? I mean, very, very impressive and incredible people. With the
tell them thank you from the board.
I definitely will.
Maybe there can be a letter from Sam Henry.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? I don't really know what this program is. Maybe when you send something, it'd be nice to know
the details behind it.
Yeah, I mean, where it fits. Does it impact, you know, time we have now and our curriculum, the core standards? I mean, just let us know how it fits in the picture so that we know. I mean,
great question.
It's very generous. And that
but does it fit?
Does it fit?
It really fits within the STEAM, within the engineering component of it. It's the Legos, and they bring in their own trainers to work with staff, and it's before and after school aspects of it. There will be a little bit of it that will move within the classroom setting, but it's a minimal amount. But I'll make sure I have
that
full detail. Yeah, great question.
And also how it links then up to our junior high model that has the Lego robotics program, and then that shifts up to the high school level with its own technology programs too. So there's some potential for linkage all the way up.
Great questions. I'll make sure I have those pieces for you for the next meeting. With me being out today, I do not have the survey update. I was hoping to give you the full timeline. I'll email that out to you in the next day to 2 days. I wasn't able to sit with Julie today, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to be on the conference call with Bill Foster tomorrow morning either. We're scheduled at 9, but I need to do some family pieces tomorrow with Marianne, so... but I will make sure we communicate that out, and then I'll have Julie make sure that we communicate that out to the public where we're at with the survey. But things continue to move along in a very positive manner.
The last update you gave us gave us the dates that were still aligned with us being able to have that feedback back in April.
April
12th.
12th, yeah, whatever that first
meeting.
Board meeting in
you don't
April
see that
it is.
Changing.
I do not see that changing. But my absence, yes, today or tomorrow won't impact that.
Mm-hmm. Paul, again, if you can't answer it, it's understandable, but are there any pieces of that that would come before that meeting that we would be able to? I'm just trying to see, you know, see if we can pull anything up.
What do you mean, Jeff?
Pieces of what?
Pieces of the survey. You know, I don't know.
Okay.
Teacher pieces done, or, you know, what?
Oh, a certain aspect.
Yeah, there's a certain aspect to pull up just so that.
Yeah.
Sometimes these surveys, you wait till the end where everything's there, and if there's something that comes earlier, it'd be
okay.
Nice to see it. Especially when it comes to the stakeholders.
Okay.
That timeline will be on the website then by
Wednesday. Yeah, I'll try to get it up in the next day or two. Again, I need to sit with Julie and Mr. Foster from School of Perceptions to make sure that we're still right where we need to be. So I'll make sure we have that out to the board, and then we will get that out to the community as a whole. Colorado trip, we sent 1211. Katie McCluskey ended up becoming fairly ill last week and was not able to attend. Sent 11 members out to Colorado today for very quick turnaround. They'll be back tomorrow night to see the STEM aspects of the three schools, to see the problem-based learning, to see how the community engagement with businesses connect to this work. So we'll have a full report on that March 24th meeting.
The 11 employees,
we ended up sending 5 teachers.
Were they, and you had mentioned the names, so I had it in my head, but from each of the schools, you don't have to take.
I was going
to
say,
I'm
stretching right now just reading stuff tonight, so I apologize.
Yeah, no, that's right. No apologies needed. But they were representative of the school.
They were.
Yeah.
They were.
I just want to get that on the record.
And I appreciate it. And I think it's going to make a big difference having them out there, the teachers along with the leaders,
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
principals.
Just been noticing lately sort of the STEAM push in the Chicago public schools. I don't know if there's an opportunity there for us to gain any learnings there. That's a school system that gets a lot of, you know, company
mm-hmm.
time. You know, I mean, part
yeah.
of the STEAM is the partnerships with IBM and all those companies, and they seem to get a lot of that. So I don't know if there's a way to piggyback off of any of that research or ideas
mm-hmm.
that maybe we could, you know, we could follow up on when the time's right.
Yeah.
You know, not.
No, I appreciate it. What an interesting factoid for that. The Chicago chief academic officer was out in Colorado 2 months prior to us at the Adams 12 schools. They're learning along with the Adams 12 individuals. It was interesting, but yeah, we absolutely will, because that's a key component of this, is really having the business community come in for a true partnership.
And that's just where, again, not a
criticism,
but it's just where I haven't seen the progress. And I know that we have a lot of companies in Chicago that are starting to put money into
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly we might be able to leverage that to do the same here.
Yeah.
Right?
So I totally agree. And I think that's that was the unique piece about Adams 12 and that type of partnership that I didn't see other places. And maybe it is, but it's something that I know very well. Mm-hmm. And I saw the partnerships grow from 2 to 3 small startup companies to multi-billion dollar corporations investing within Adams 12, a district that most, for the 23 years that I was a part of Adams 12, I never saw the level of partnership that was began 5 years ago with these STEAM pieces. So, John, you're absolutely right. It is a piece that we need to step up to and make a stronger presence in the business community with our STEAM.
There, I think there's an opportunity right in our own backyard. There was an article in the business section in the Herald yesterday, and I think last week, and I pulled them both, and partly to share with District 87, but also for us. And it's called Rev 4, Rev Up. It's an innovation model, and they're moving into DuPage, so it's like a cell, kind of a think tank, where they're going to provide space for small startups, some capital, but the plan, if you go on the website, I'll send it to you guys, and I have the article to send to Julie, too. But it made me think about the very thing we're doing with our PBLs, and that they're moving to DuPage County because they see opportunities out here, especially with the DuPage Technology Center, which is the high school's kind of vocational partnership program. But I think that might be a great foray immediately, just to get something out there. And they have a space plan. They're not here yet because I kept looking for addresses, but they're moving here in 2014. So it's within the next quarter, I believe. But it's 3D printing, lots of really neat innovation stuff in our backyard. So there's that. And then, John, to your point about CPS, I thought you were going to say they get a bad rap, which they do. But for the III conference, there's always a bus tour. And I didn't go this year or last year, but I went the year before, and it brings you to the magnet schools and also their tech center schools. And so you're seeing some of what you're saying. And so what's interesting to me is their chief academic officer is out at Adams 12 in some ways, looking at leveraging some of that learning, but also are we on the right path? So that makes that certainly makes me feel better about what we're investing to send our folks out to Adams 12, but also looking at some of what's in CPS in these higher level kind of magnet schools or the tech schools. They do have lots to offer in terms of local.
There is what's interesting about the Chicago one too is it's not charter or magnet now. They're starting to say
they're putting into the regular PS, yeah.
And this STEAM thing has a lot of movement when you get corporations behind there.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
That was a game changer when Adams 12 was able to be embraced by a large corporation. It just started making things happen, which then opened the door for other corporations to come into because of all the connections they make. It's a pretty fascinating piece. And these corporations do want to make a difference in schools, and they want to know how. Mm-hmm. So the other interesting piece to this is iProject. Two incredible young ladies who were Hadley students. I forget where they went to elementary school, but they were District 41 students.
Probably Ben Franklin.
Yeah, probably. You think so? But these two young ladies have put together this iProject that will culminate on Thursday at Hadley, where they're bringing all the 8th graders together for a STEM experience. Mm-hmm. And you talk about connections. These young ladies have over 50 different corporations lined up and ready to present to our students at Hadley. I've had a small piece in it, and I'll be over there on Thursday.
Oh, it's 8:30 to 12,
yeah.
Right? So it's the morning.
Yeah, it's the morning session with, mm-hmm. with the students. But I'm just blown away at these two young ladies who've just put together an incredible STEM club at Glenbard West. And this club now has really embraced their idea around the iProject and made it this incredible opportunity for our students to be engaged in it on Thursday. So huge kudos to the two of them. They are going to be running the world very shortly.
Just an FYI, I called Kyle Seek, who's the 8th grade counselor over there, and we're certainly welcome to pop over. So
absolutely,
I can go for the first hour in the morning, but I thought it would be important and interesting to get over and see it. So.
And then I was present at League of Women Voters, and I can't even remember the day, to be quite honest. Was it last?
So Wednesday, Tuesday?
I met at some time.
Last week sometime.
last week sometime. along with John Perdue from 89 and Dave Larson, from the superintendent, from 87. Dr. Perdue spoke on Common Core, which you would not think would be the most engaging topic, the League of Women Voters, but that man is amazing. 90% of the questions were for him around the Common Core. Dr. Larson spoke about the one-to-one initiative and the referendum that's coming forth in his district. I was able to speak about STEM and STEAM education for our district. It was just a great opportunity, a great turnout for a very, very cold evening. That was a nice opportunity that the League of Women Voters reached out to the local superintendents and asked us to present.
And it's, I know we've talked about this before, and Joe's mentioned this, we talked about this at the last meeting, but it's a group of community members who have either put their children through the district and or have volunteered, I mean, been really active people, mostly women, but there are male members of the league too. And it just touches that other community voice and, you know, important for us to keep connecting with, so it was a good presentation. I have a comment about the park thing, but I'll bring that up later. In the board.
I'm done.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome.
Board reports. Jump right in.
All right. Everybody got this, but the LEND meeting this Friday, which is the Legislative Education Network of DuPage County, is this coming Friday, so I'll be going to that. It's at 7:15 to 8:15 over at the District 89 Case Building, which is on Park and Butterfield there. The comment that I wanted to make was around also, we all got this email, and I know that, so I won't repeat it all, but there was one piece in it that was important in terms of the report from down in Springfield, and it has to do with some of what Dr. Perdue from 89 talked about in terms of the park assessments. And what Peg Agnos, the executive director of LEND, mentioned is that there are 7,000 bills that have been introduced, which is mind-boggling. And some recurring themes, and one of those are bills or resolutions to, with regard especially to the park assessments. And so I wanted to put that on the table and add it to the agenda for our next meeting if we could, for a couple of reasons. Number one, Dr. Perdue talked about some of the overlap and the overlay of testing. And so I know that we have our ISAT schedules out already. I saw Hadley's and the master schedule for that. But I know that we're also we're piloting in some of our classrooms the park assessments. So I'd like to find out how that's going to impact the kids, just in terms of how much time and also with the ISAT tests still going on, even though those are going away. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of this is, so Peg Agnos and others from the Cook and Collar counties have met with and are going to continue to meet with Chris Cook, who's the ISBE, Illinois State Board of Ed's, chair, president, and talk about the park assessments because there's so many questions about them, the length of time, their degree of rigor, and Dr. Perdue talked about that, and I know that we've had some of that conversation, but I feel like we need to have a more discreet conversation about it and how you see it impacting, you know, these particular classrooms, etc.
So sure that's on.
Yeah, so that was part of it. The other thing I want to mention about the league is that it's and just not to lose this, so we have this documented, but to remind ourselves of this as well. Last year, the league chose to do an education facility study, and they used 89 and 41, and they came back to the table, and we all saw that report. And I think Patrick, you and Dean and Joe were in the audience that night, or a part of it, and they had had supported the desire for District 41 to move forward on facilities planning and you know, saw the value in that. So I say that because I think it is a good group of people to stay connected with because they have history with the community and also ask really good questions and really challenging questions so that we're thinking about where we're headed and all that. So I want to make sure that stays on the table. The last thing I wanted to mention is just another article on education, and this has come up again, that I think has a little more, I don't know, leg behind it this time, and it's about education funding reform. Of course, with an election year, you know, the question is whether or not we're going to move forward. But I just wanted to read one part out of this. This was in the Tribune. And the idea behind this is to create a funding formula that folds all state dollars for operating schools into a single pot, and then it's distributed. But the key to this, I think, that's important for us as a board to keep on radar is that, you know, there's this perception that we fall into this, you know, wealthier school district area, which I think on some level we do, but we're certainly not in the top eight that they list. And I know from our study 2 weeks ago, we saw where we fell in terms of per pupil spending, operating, and educational costs. But this is the piece I thought was important, another part of the education funding. And I, as a board, I think this is an opportunity for us to think about how we might support this as it moves forward. Giving districts extra money for students who need more help, including low-income children, those who have not mastered English, and special education students. The new formula also uses weights, a funding calculation common in other states. For example, a district would get 25% more, or a weight of 0.25 for each low-income student. And our demographics, as we all know, have changed, and, you know, like all districts, 200, all the ones around us, too. But I think it's important, with the number of things on the plate for legislators, education funding reform from a board voice perspective, from us wanting to weigh in, is absolutely critical. And you know, I've been type like some of us several years in iterations of education funding reform conversations. This seems to be a little bit different in the way that they're looking at it, and that the Chicago Public Schools are willing to have conversation about not taking their X dollars that they typically get first, but leaving that as part of the larger pot, which is a huge amount of money that other districts don't have access to. So that's a little bit of a difference, and I just want to keep some of this in front of us as a board because, you know, it's important for us to be able to weigh in on as a voice. And the last thing I had as a quick other was, Maureen, whether or not you were able to check on the NSBA membership and whether or not there was any plus or minus to not paying for NSBA participation versus IASD. Do we lose anything in the mix?
Not that. It's difficult to get them to respond because they could, you know, by the information that was available.
Okay, so there really isn't a detriment.
I cannot subscribe.
Okay, so you wouldn't get that. Okay. Because I know you want us to weigh in on that. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Maureen.
You're welcome.
And musical mayhem was mayhem. For the last 30 minutes. But yeah, it was
well titled.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Anybody else?
I can do finance real quick.
Okay, Drew.
Basically, we had two things on the agenda. One, and both of them we'll talk about as discussion items. One is the bid results from the school addition projects, and the other one is the Patrick Quinn contract agreement. Both of them have been discussed in finance and are going into the full board for the discussion period. We also did talk about the intergovernmental agreement is our ongoing discussion in finance. We kind of ran out of time, so we'll probably bring that back for our next meeting. So that's all I got.
Okay. Anybody else?
CIT. It was sparsely attended, but I was there. The biggest piece that came out of it, CIT will be looking at the study that we brought forward and looking at like districts. that were achieving at a higher rate than we were, to see what they were doing. So a small subcommittee of that team will be looking for those like districts who are outperforming District 41.
This was the time study.
This is the CIT. This is our CIT work. So we've been looking at
data. This off of the analytics?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I apologize.
Okay.
The Advantage analytics. So we've been looking at student data as a team, and that was one more piece that we looked at, and there will be a subcommittee that looks at, as I said, the like schools from a demographic standpoint.
Okay. Yeah, I was, as part of my duties, I needed to attend CIT. I could not make it last week, and so I appreciate Paul's update there. The calendar committee also met, but I don't think we'll be talking about that later on in the meeting, so we don't need to really rehash that right now. I don't have anything else. Anybody else have anything?
No, finance did not.
Okay. Discussion items. The first item up is the class size target recommendation.
So we've set forward the recommendation for the targets that we put in front of you at the last board meeting. Going off of the board's actions last spring, this would be a three-year plan. That's why they were done in levels and not grades for this year. So that was the impetus behind it, was to put them in levels. So with that, I'll hand it over to the board members.
Any thoughts, comments?
Well, I want to reaffirm that the purpose of class size targets, because this comes up every year, and part of it is for planning purposes, as Laura has provided in our report. We start staff planning early, mm-hmm. as early as possible. So that's part of it. The other thing that I always have asked about year on year, and that I want to confirm, is that the targets are a target, and that if we heard in public participation earlier the concern that there is a number larger than the target, one or two students, and that depending on mobility, depending on kids coming in or moving out, that that's going to adjust. And the question was always wanting to make sure that that adjustment, whatever it was always taken into account in terms of what the changes to the classroom would be. So, this is always a hard conversation for me, because when I hear targets, it feels moving to me. And I know that this is for staffing purposes, but I want to, confirm that the bottom of our report, which says we have a practice of reviewing the targets with considerations given to, not a guarantee of, but the need to add staff depending on academic performance, grade level rises, et cetera. So I just want to make sure that that continues to be at the forefront of decisions anytime we look at increasing or decreasing also a class size. I did have a question also about doing this in levels. And it makes sense to me with what I just said, which is we're planning for staffing, and as we move forward with action by the board, this has the potential to shift as well. Mm-hmm. So planning for a leveling, knowing that board action is going to get taken, and some of those decisions might be different. So I'm comfortable knowing that there's some flexibility in it, but that we have to be thinking about staffing, and we're moving off of our board action from last year, which was to roll out in a three-year cycle. So that makes sense to me too. I always want to make sure this is not hard and fast, that there's some flexibility to this, because we know our kids are different and the needs are different, and we have to have some flexibility around it.
With the disclaimers below the proposal, historically, have we ever had a situation where we've added a class because of class size?
Yeah, we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At Churchill.
At Churchill, mm-hmm. we've we did that where we felt the group of kids needed to be smaller, so we added a class to it. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Was that 2 years ago, Tim?
Back in the 1900s, I don't know.
I think it was
but it's been done.
Show.
Yeah, it's been done where we felt 25 or 26 for the number of kids didn't make sense.
So when you do that, are you changing, are you bringing kids from other schools to make that class more full?
No, it was a teacher.
It was all within.
Yeah, it's within.
It's all within that school because they have four or five sections.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the numbers for that would work out and bringing it down to, like, if you're at 25, you bring it down to 20.
Mm-hmm. It is one of the other reasons why we're trying to get a better grasp of our registration numbers and why we're going to be doing registration, online registration early. We're going to be communicating that out in a very broad manner soon. But that's another end result of this, is to have those registrations back to us sooner so we can confirm our numbers. You know, I would love to be sitting right around, you know, 95% registered students by late June, so we're really tight there. But by late May, I would like to be in that 90, you know, the low 90s. So that is another helpful tool for this, and so we're not having to add classes too late into, you know, into the school year, because that does disrupt. Mm-hmm. That's hard.
Well, and we don't have the flexibility of the space to do that either.
Nope.
But isn't there any other inherent problem with this? I'm just trying to follow the math here. If I'm adding one class at level 3, I actually need to add 2 classes to make it even. I'm just trying to think this through. I'm doing this on the
fly. But remember, some students for math are taken out for gifted.
Okay.
So there are some. It's not as clean.
Kind of one for one.
It's just not. A lot of times, you're right, in literacy is generally where you'll have larger numbers, but within the math, we see lower numbers.
That provides you flexibility.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
So there's no one clean answer on student numbers. And I appreciate what you said. There's flexibility here. We talk to our principals. We speak to them. I have the history of fall on my side, and that's it. But that's what we did this past fall.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Sorry. Just a couple questions. I know you said, you know, we put these to the levels, but I'm sure you did this, but you didn't say, so I just wanted to make sure. Usually we're also looking at the growth of, you know, the groups moving from 2 to 3.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
All those considerations were taken into account. We look at those numbers. We look at past numbers. We look at student numbers right now.
And
yes.
Then,
thank you.
You did this 2-3. You know, you did this 2 thing and this 3 thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a plus 3 on 2, minus 1 on 3, overall plus 2 on that. Is that the idea?
That was the idea.
Okay. And since we're in literacy and STEM, given the 2 different blocks, these numbers still work.
They do. And we run these by our principals. We have a lot of conversations internally about these numbers, making sure that they're quality numbers and that they will work for them.
Okay. And then on the AYP, which has its
yes.
own special, is that required or?
No, but there are pieces that we do need to make considerations for. We have to do things at times differently for. Especially Churchill, but next year with the mandate being 100%, we're going to have more schools not achieving it.
I guess I know these are targets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to get there, but is there really? Can you arguably say that taking the target down by 2 for AYP students does anything?
Statistically. For when you look in the large picture, statistically, you really need to bring it down to in that 16-17 number. When you look at the research behind class size, that's when you're going to get a significant difference. But when you are dealing with students of poverty or with some other within other recipient groups, it is better to have smaller class sizes, in my opinion.
So, and maybe I'm just not.
No, you're.
Maybe I'm just not understanding this, right? But if I have, you know, I'll take the extreme. If
yep.
I have one child, that or one student, that's AYP in a fourth, fifth class,
mm-hmm.
does that whole class go to 23 to 25, even though it's just one student?
I think that's where we would have the conversations with the principal and saying, should we put an 8 in? Can we do something along those lines? Because you're right, there becomes a point when it, at times it becomes too small to be doing those things. It's those conversations.
Yeah, I guess
I don't have the historical piece.
Remember that
I have
there's some children, some subgroups that have, some subgroup that hasn't made AYP may have children in that subgroup who are in multiple groups.
Mm-hmm. Very
and
much so.
And so what this doesn't reflect also is what that it's presented to us before, which is, are those other supports that are built in for those subgroups, and are those supports there? So
yeah, I guess I mean we've had this last year, and I guess I didn't catch this, whatever. But I just a target for just seems that would be so hard to think through. I mean, if you've got fourth or fifth grade, and you've got two AYP kids, you've got another one that's got 8. I mean, I don't know why you have a separate.
So can we go back? That statement is that speaking to kids or
yeah, because I just grabbed that. You and I grabbed
it. School,
not an AYP kid.
The subgroups of children.
Yeah,
but it's just the school.
Right.
That school, pick Churchill, should it be
yes.
their fourth and fifth grade will have a target of 23
yes.
to 25.
Okay. That's what it means. I apologize.
Yeah. Okay.
It is not about an individual kid. It's
right.
a school.
Right.
That
but either way, that how many AYP... So Churchill is an AYP school.
So while it's
fourth and fifth grade, we may have 25 AYP kids.
I don't think that matters in the equation.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah. the school.
It's the school.
So you're just making them all...
This is a lower class size, yeah.
That school should have a lower class size because of the AYP for two consecutive years. That's what I believe that bullet point's trying to say.
I guess I don't get it, but...
Well, I'm visualizing where you're going. What I think, again, is not reflected here is that when you don't make AYP, it's because a certain subgroup has not made, what was it, 93% or whatever it was.
I think it's 95.2%.
Yeah. Next year it's 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So
next year we're all going to have our targets.
Yeah.
We'll have some subgroups.
We
won't
address it.
Only the schools that have reportable
subgroups,
which
are
the only two schools, Hadley mm-hmm. and Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're really talking about here.
Right.
Yeah. I guess
it making a difference?
Yeah, I don't see how this makes a difference, but... Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good question.
At some level, I mean, if the data shows it's 16s, the
mm-hmm.
cutoff where it starts making a huge difference, that's the ideal class size, and we can't go that low. So the question, we don't have the space.
And the cost. Yeah.
But the question, John, is just having one or two less students, you feel it doesn't make a difference.
I'm asking.
Yeah.
But at some level, just making it smaller has to, to me, it's... The teacher has more direct time.
The data suggests it doesn't.
No, it suggests that 16 is where the cutoff
right.
is. It doesn't suggest that one.
So in this situation, it would suggest.
I doubt if it's a step. I don't think the data shows that if you're at 25, you're here, and if you're at 16,
mm-hmm.
you're here. But everywhere in between, you're here. That's probably not what the data shows.
They don't see a significant change between those from that 16, 17, and to all the way up to 30, I think.
My point is, as this becomes more relevant, because all our schools
are going to
be in this, this is a practice that we say we're going to start doing for all our grades. I mean, this will have an impact.
But is that true? Go back to what Sam just said, and you can clarify if you like, Sam, for me.
We have to be 100%.
You have to have identified subgroups.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, in our district, we only have two schools that have identifiable reportable.
But we have a trend of larger numbers of those subgroups developing in our school system.
Yeah, so it may not be a year, which is what you said. It was a year.
Well, in a year, we're at 100%.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that then your AYP,
you're right,
if I understand what Sam said.
It doesn't mean
I just want to make it clear so we understand. Okay.
The other thing is, this is an annual conversation. So, based on shifts
new
next
data.
Year, will the board would have to look at this differently, depending on what...
Well, it's an annual conversation. I missed it last year. I've spoken.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's disagreeing with you.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. And I also have the same comments marked down in that, you know, we're targeting with levels, and if, you know, we as a board make a change after all our evaluation of the program, I would assume, and you know, maybe I shouldn't assume, but I would assume that then these targets would then revert back to somewhat like last year's, or this year's targets in the grades. Is that a fair assumption? Or
I think that's a very fair assumption. If the board so chooses to do that, yeah, we would then go back to grades. Mm-hmm. We did it based off of the board's direction last year.
Right.
Which, as it stands right now, that's what you need
that's,
to do, because
yeah,
that's what the plan is as of today.
Yep.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
I appreciate the clarity.
Okay. Anything else on class size targets?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, maybe the driving force should be like the square foot of the room. Some smaller classes take less. But anyway, go ahead. Calm down.
Okay.
How do you know we don't do that? We probably do.
Well, you can if you're not.
If you've been
yeah, you can't yeah. be, yeah.
You can't if every grade's assigned in every building. Okay.
Well,
thank you for listening.
You're welcome.
Well, in public participation, there was this issue with, you know, that the targets were exceeded in this one.
But I would want to know, I guess my question is, were they exceeded for a week, 2 weeks? I need to go back and look. Did we address it soon? Once we knew about it, did we address it? So I took a note on it, and I want to go back on my memory. I don't know right off.
You'll report back to
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
I just want to hear... I want to hear what you have to say.
I appreciate that. No,
remember, it's his target. We're talking about
understand.
Kids.
Right,
we could have 10 kids move in that need to be placed, in which case our targets are like...
Right.
The schools have to figure out how to do the best they can.
So I
took the note, though.
I think our rule is if we're two students over according to this, then we should evaluate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what we did, but don't quote me on it. I will look back at it, and I'll report back.
That, I shouldn't say it's a rule. That's our process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, with consideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on. The 2014-15 student fees.
Oh, another favorite.
Yes. Well, the personal favorite of mine.
I'll let you
Yeah, I mean, as we all know, this is one of my personal favorites, pet peeves, whatever you like to call it. I just don't think that we as a district need to be charging basic fees. I do agree with the parent who spoke earlier in public participation in that we pay a lot of taxes in this district, and there's a lot of fees generated, and a lot of revenue generated. So I just don't, you know, as a matter of principle, I just don't think the basic fees are necessary. The activity fees, the sports fees, all those other things are obviously they are needed. But the basic fees is what I'm focusing on. I did ask Bob earlier today, and thanks, Bob, for the information, that he broke it down for me. The report tells us that there's $235,000 annually generated from the basic and activity fees. The basic fees generate $215,000 of that $235,000. So I would... what I'm focusing on is the basic fee, the $215,000. I would.
Did you get the breakout of the junior high? Because the junior high does sometimes have some additional things that certain people bring. Do you know what the additional?
I don't know, and I don't know what you might.
You mean what that $115 goes to?
Is it itemized? Is it just a flat fee? Is it? Itemized for
like those
lab.
Goggles you got to get. Is that part of this 115 or is that more?
If it is, then I would say let's buy the goggles.
Okay.
No, it's to me it's we're providing education and whatever needs to be provided with that education should be there for the you know, for the kids.
So would that include iPads?
I think it does, Jen. To be honest, I think we're providing iPads and. Notebooks.
No, but I mean that would be I mean, I've always been on this on the same side, but that we shouldn't be charging this fee. What I'm saying in your mind, then, let's say we get to a point where we want the kids to bring a laptop to school. Is that, would that be considered, you know, would that be something that you would think would be a part of something they shouldn't have to pay for?
Yes. Using your example, if we as a board and Paul as the superintendent provides a curriculum that requires the use of certain things, then I think we as a district should provide those things free of charge. If that includes an iPad, if that includes rubber gloves,
You can go to the extreme on that one, though.
Mm-hmm.
We force them to
see the numbers.
They take gym, therefore we have to supply them gym shoes. I mean,
or does it stop? Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
I don't think we'll be buying gym shoes because you'll probably need two pairs for each kid the way they grow.
And there are ways to carve those out. If we want to make that those kind of differentiations. Mm-hmm. But basic fee is, as long as my kids have been in the district, it's just a fee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I may have asked Ann before Paul, and Ann said it's revenue.
It's a user fee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just...
You know, on the issue of supplies, one of the things that we talked about at Team 21 for the last meeting, and it'll come up again, and I did a little investigating, was the issue of supplies. And all the teachers have done a kind of filled out a survey on the kind of supplies that they feel like they need, you know, to have in the classroom. And I know, you know, even going to Office Depot or whatever, you still see some of the old lists out there. So, again, to the comment made earlier about the cost of supplies, there is a conversation now among Team 21 and thinking about what kind of supplies do we really need. Part of this and the work that I did for the team to go back and report on are the supplies for success kits that get donated for children who need supplies. But the other piece of this are PTAs that provide the supplies ahead of time. So they buy it all. You pay the money and it shows up, you know, for your child. The teaching model, some of it problem-based learning, but you know, some of the modeling, just has us using supplies a little bit differently. Teachers are conscious of that and want to make sure that they're not asking for things they're not going to use or need. So that is going on, and I don't know, might impact the supply costs and that type of thing, but it's certainly on the radar of teachers to know what do we really need to have, you know, parents bring in, et cetera.
But just so we're clear, I mean, those are what they are, but they're not included in basic fees or activities.
No, but there is some conversation around should the district be buying bulk because it can save X number of dollars on markers. You know I had a parent ask me last year, why am I buying three sets of markers? And I said, well, if your child was like my child, he left the caps off. And so by week three, you know, his red marker was dry or whatever. I mean, that may be a simplistic view of it, but the reality is you have a lot of kids using supplies, and they're not always good about taking care of them. They go through, I had a teacher tell me she went through 100 pencils in 3 months. You know, just, I mean, that's some of the data that is...
Because it disappeared?
No, just some of the pencils that are in the supplies for success kids are not, kits are not as of high quality, you know? And I mean, that's just some of the reality of what you know, we're... You know, we're providing or being provided. So I'm doing some work on that for Team 21. But it may have some conversation value around being able to offset some of the costs that parents are feeling because we may not need all those things. And we probably don't. They're probably things we're buying we don't need necessarily. So I think it's an important conversation to have.
I mean, those are things that the principals and the staff can do on an annual basis to determine what supplies they're getting.
And that's what they're doing. Karen's initiated that this year for that. Just one comment about the activity fees, and you probably saw this too, but in District 200 there's a big discussion going on about B teams at the middle school level. They suspended all B team activity, and parents have been concerned about that, want kids at the middle school level particularly to have that opportunity to be on a team and play, and it's all just being cost conscious. So, you know, one of the things I know we've tried to do at Hadley is to provide larger open sports for kids, and so there's a lot more involvement than there used to be. And, you know, from a usage standpoint, we have a lot of kids that don't have the right equipment, and so a lot of that gets donated. So, there's some behind-the-scenes story to some of this, too. I'll go on record. The basic fees, I think, helped to offset what's, Bob has put in this report, and especially with some of the new technology and the cost of that, I think it helps to keep pace with some of what we want our kids to be able to have access to in terms of research and that type of thing. So,
2 weeks ago, we talked about this at Finance Committee, and a lot of our focus and questions we asked of Bob was really, what are we like for the neighboring communities to get a sense? Were we high? Were we low? Mm-hmm. Are there other people who have none? Other districts, and we're in about the middle or so. Was the bottom line. Mm-hmm. That was one thing we wanted to know. We also looked at, I think this would be, but the activity fees are relatively, they're a drop in the bucket to the cost. I started asking fee revenue to cost basis, and this is just on the activity fees, and I know no one has a problem with the activity fees from what I can hear in this discussion, mm-hmm. but there's a large cost to have the activities, and these are very, very small fees relative to it. And you just gave the statistics that it's about 10% of the 235 is really activity fees.
Yeah, it's like so 20,000.
Yeah.
So it's, and knowing from a supplemental pay committee level, that doesn't even...
It's not a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Well,
just to get the numbers out.
If we need to take a look at the fees to make sure they align more closely with the actual cost, then that's a discussion we could have. I'm not opposed to that.
No, in the activity fee section, you get a pay-to-play type of approach, and that has dangers, too, even though we do have waivers for those who do fall under the level that they trigger in, and then they don't have to pay the fees. I think as a board member, we have a larger constituency than just the parents and the taxpayers as a whole in District 41. And when you look at the total revenue generated, it is part of the budget. And it's not necessarily a big part of the budget, but we do have uncertainty in other revenues from the state and so forth and so on. Our budget's relatively tight. So I think that is something that, as a board, we have to take into large consideration.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree with that, but...
Sam, I think the conversation that finance is a conversation that we're having here. Does the fees buy goggles and it's going to cost this much? And I think, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the administrative nightmare to do that with... just ridiculous. So it's a more of a revenue, this is what we've been doing for the past 2 or 3 years, let's just kind of move it forward. Truthfully, I'm kind of on, I don't say your side of the fence, but I'm on the kind of activities, basic fees. That's something that we pay for indirectly every 6 months. But I do understand the revenue implications to the budget almost balances to the penny, every year. So I'm still on the fence on this one. I don't want to cheat ourselves off of fiscal discipline, but at the same time, I don't want to discard revenue that's on the table that hasn't changed in 3 years. I paid these fees. Everybody pays these fees. I don't know what they go to specifically, but I know that they go to supporting the budget. Truthfully, I'm still on the fence on this one. If we would vote tonight, I don't know where I would land.
So we have this
every year.
Every year it's the same thing,
yeah.
Right? So to me, we always get stuck like this and we don't do anything. So if somebody...
we had that conversation in finance, too.
Right.
Where every year we kick it down the road another year. And
so, you know, I don't know, maybe to put it in perspective, if you got three kids in the school district, you're paying $250, $260. It's a little bit the equivalent of what your tax increase might be from our levy that year. So, it is decent money when you've got kids in the school system. So, to me, if there either are or aren't enough board members that support this, which is always the case, but if we don't, you know, if we're at this point again, for, you know, time number whatever, two or three, on this, then we should assign it to somebody, and somebody needs to come back with, you know, an evaluation or a way to do this where the budget changes and it's part of our levy, or, you know, I mean, it is part of our levy, but it's, someone take
action. Finding those or
someone take an action
to
come back so we're not having the same discussion.
I got lost on that.
So what are you suggesting?
I got lost because it's $250,000 of a multi-million-dollar budget. It's not a lot. It's more.
No, it's a very small amount. But we say a small amount, but to some families, this is like the equivalent of the tax increase they got.
Right.
Now, the argument for this is that those people that don't have kids in the school system aren't funding or paying for the kids that are in the school system using the services. So that's the argument for it, right? That's the, you know, why burden everybody with the cost, just the folks that are using it, right? Which is a solid argument. And then there's the argument, well, we already pay enough, so let's just figure a way to budget into our school year and fund it that way. And, you know, our levy will reflect that, you know, in some form or fashion, right? So that those are the two arguments.
Well, I hope it wouldn't do that. I hope we wouldn't say we're going to take it out of this and then we're going to throw it into a levy discussion.
It'd be part of the levy because we're not. It's a revenue source that we'd have to somehow make up.
Well, you could cut. You could cut stuff.
You can cut stuff.
Sure, absolutely.
So that's the other
option. Yeah. Which would be reflected in our levy if we did one. So.
Well, no. It'd be one if you did it one for one. It wouldn't be right. Where you got the exact expense away from the exact revenue, there'd be no change in levy.
I didn't see that.
Okay.
That would be, I mean, that's theoretically the answer. I mean, and we have to do proper planning, so I don't know how long taking it out and punting it, if that would be wise, because we do have to move forward on what we're going to do and from a budgetary standpoint. If you punt it at 60 days, you're going to cause waves. So if there's some subcommittee or something that wants to look at this, then, you know,
that's what I'm saying. We either think that there's value to do that and say someone look at this and the next year come back.
For the following year, yeah. But this year, make a decision when it comes up for a vote. That's what I'd say.
You can there's, you know, Wheaton-Warrenville 200 has the B team things as you talked about. District 58 is considering fees for busing services because people are having, you know, people are having these discussions all over different districts.
Well, and that another legislative piece, but legislator is looking at cutting $1.6 billion from the education budget. So that's being debated now. And that's transportation dollars, general state aid, special education. So it's a decision based on other external impacts, too. You know, I'll say I am on the side of John's first argument, which is the, you know, those of us in the district that are using it, those in the district use it. It's a user fee. And for activities, we know that that's a really important part of a kid's, you know, experience, social, emotionally, confidence builder, all those things. So those are important. I don't know that there's a need on. I don't see the need to put this to a committee to look at it unless. You know, there's a consensus to do it, and then go ahead and do it.
Is that for the activity fees? Or
not just activity,
fees?
Look at the whole thing. I will tell you that this conversation around supplies might have some impact on the cost, and that the district, you know, might end up assuming some of that, which would help, you know, in terms of costs on that level from a, you know, parent perspective, which I think is important. We need to really look at that because I think there's some waste.
So, Paul, this is an administrative recommendation, so you basically think we ought to just charge this?
I do for this year. I'm absolutely cognizant of what you're talking about, but I appreciate what Joe said. If you give me a two-year window, I can budget for it. I'm right now sitting in budget meetings probably 2 days a week trying to ensure that we bring you a budget that's sustainable. So if you were to say, you know what, we're going to keep it for this year, but we are going to cut it for this year, that would help me. I could plan for that, but right now I'm in the middle of budgeting. And as Patrick said, $235,000, it is substantial. That would, I mean, if the board is considering cutting it, I would ask for a two-year window rather than this year.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see the basic fees eliminated. I'd like to see the activity fees looked at to see, you know, like we discussed earlier, if these activities doesn't match the cost of the activity. If it doesn't, why doesn't it? What's the rationale behind that? Where do these numbers come from? Do we need to adjust it? And maybe when the numbers are actually adjusted, it won't be that much of a discrepancy. I don't know.
But it will be a huge discrepancy based on the numbers Bob presented to us at the Finance Committee.
So we can bring those forward to you.
Because I think we started doing per pupil. It gets weird. It's more than what you would spend to send your kid to. Patrick, you and I were talking about that park district program cost $150 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was beyond that. So, just for the record, just so somebody stated that these fees have not increased for us newbies here for the last 3 years. I think, John, you said
seven years.
Okay, so there, yeah. So that's what I thought. And the Finance Committee was 7 years. Okay.
Kevin, I think there's so much uncertainty with the projects that are doing in terms of what's going on with the state funding. You know, even $200,000 being eliminated from the budget could have a significant impact.
But it's, I mean, when we don't do something for 7 years and we're keeping it flat, that goes to the other side of the fence for me is, where's the rationale for this? If it's just a fee just to have revenue and we haven't done anything in 7 years, the premise 7 years ago, has it not changed at all? Or are we just saying it's a fee that's a fee that we need to have revenue for, but we're not... We're too ashamed or too scared to either adjust it or get rid of it. Because 7 years ago, we said $56 was enough to do something. Mm-hmm. And that $56...
That's just for your kindergartner, though. That's
yeah, right.
It goes up to $75.
Right, so...
That's a big jump.
Somebody made a decision 7 years ago that said $56 was a nice number.
I think people are looking at market data. I hate to be silly and go back to the market. But
you
look around and all these other districts are charging these small fees so they can get another $200,000 in their budget. I mean, now people are getting creative and... You know, the B school thing, the B team thing, they're trying to just do in school games, you know, so that they're not doing any traveling.
Right.
They're just going from one elementary to the other in their district. The busing thing is $25 a year to have your kid go on a bus to help with the transportation fees.
Well, that goes to the other side. I mean, do we need that subcommittee? Okay, we're just going to scratch basic fees, but we're going to have a bus fee and we're going to have a.
Well, just people testing what's in the market. I mean, because if you don't do it here and you don't cut programs, you're going to tax your stakeholders, all your stakeholders, not just the user fee. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you look at these, and if we fall within the market, obviously the market's saying you should generate some income from this, and people are accepting it. It may not be ideal, it may not be perfect, but, you know, what system is perfect? So I think the reason we don't see it increasing is we don't see anybody forcing it to increase.
Okay, I think we got the general gist of this. So what I am hearing is that I think it's going to come back next meeting for action.
24th is the action.
But some of us at least are looking for some sort of analysis on the annual amount of the fees. So let's move on from there. Two, the 2014 elementary school facility funding.
This is the recommendation from the Finance Committee. I'm not sure if the Finance Committee wants to talk a little bit more about this. We did have some conversation last week. around the borrowing and using up to $7 million in reserve funds.
There been any other conversation at the finance committee level about this?
No,
this was
we and is bringing it to the board. Okay. And you know, I don't want to speak for the other board members, but this was we could have gone 9 different ways in the proposal, and you know, to move forward, this is the proposal that we the finance committee agreed upon. Again, this isn't we're not looking to. This isn't a referendum. This isn't. We're not asking our community to vote on a referendum to increase. This is operating budget out of reserves. Mm-hmm. You know, paying out of our own pocket what they contributed in the past years that supported our reserves. Now, the facilities plan has been this thing blue ribbon committees and all that since 2009 or whatever it was.
Since John was first on the board.
Yeah, so
9 years ago.
Right out of Glen Bard West, probably. But, you know.
I didn't graduate.
So
what are we voting on, then? Because are we taking action?
Discussion.
No, I understand
that.
But we'll
next
be voting
meeting,
on
are we voting
the funding
on
plan.
Funding this way, or are we just voting on the phase one, and then if we vote on phase one, the recommendation? Are we voting on this, or is this just your recommendation? And
you will vote on this.
Yeah, we're going to vote on this.
Next.
But the vote will be bifurcated. There'll be two separate votes.
Well,
vote on the facilities.
It makes sense that the facilities would have to be approved.
There will be two votes, because I didn't see that on the...
I don't think we knew that.
So you would vote on the funding, which... would approve the project moving forward. I mean,
so is the project
I'm not sure why you would approve money if you're not approving the project.
Right.
I mean, to me, that doesn't. We certainly can bring another recommendation that you approve the project, but not.
No, I.
But it just yeah.
I'm
to
asking,
me, this makes.
I'm
sense.
I'm asking you what you guys are asking from us.
I apologize. Yeah. We're asking you to fund the project in this manner, through a 7-7 and. Basically $1 million from operating.
So, assume this gets approved. Would we go out for the loan immediately? Is that the idea?
Yes.
And lock it
to
in.
To capture the
lock the rate.
Yeah. Okay. And then, may have read this wrong again.
No, you're good.
I often do. But next meeting, we would be approving the first part of phase one.
Correct.
So I guess... You know, I'm starting to ask. The first part of phase one is $4.7 million or $4.4 million, whatever it is.
Yeah, you would approve the bids for that aspect of it. You would still need to approve the bids for the second piece because obviously that goes above the $10,000. But you're moving the project forward.
There's more bids to come, though.
Yes.
As far as the first.
Right. No, I understand that. So.
No, in the year one, there's still more bids.
Yeah.
Those bids are only for certain trades that you read. Later on that we're going to discuss.
Yeah,
that's not all of Lincoln and all of Ben Franklin. There's more to plug in for trades. I don't know what that total number is off the top of my head. So don't ask me
I guess that where I'm going do we think that's less than $7 million? I'm kind of wondering, do we really need to fund, do we really need to go borrow $7 million when we're really approving less than $7 million, which we say we're taking out of reserves next meeting? Or do we say we're going to fund this part with reserves, assuming that we move forward with part two of phase one, then we will go get that loan.
Finance committee, you're on.
We talked a lot about that, John. We thought it was best to do the funding up front via the loans based on the current marketplace of interest rates. And the numbers kind of jive that we're spending about half the money on the first two projects. And Jack, if you want to give the notes. We have more site work going on at the other places, and it depends on permanent process and all that, too, to give you exact figures if we'll get to $7 million. But roughly, you can look at it as half to half. But at the end of the day, what we did discuss is it was best to pre-fund, if you will, some of the money just to lock in our interest rates, and there's cost to doing multiple tranches or multiple fundings. We took that into consideration. And even though we could do it and be to
told us we could do it, and our attorneys told us we could do it. There's a lot more documentation than fees.
But the tranche would only be...
Tranche?
It's $7 million, right?
No.
Well, if we did multiple tranches.
If we did multiple tranches.
Right, but we're not talking about... Even under this scenario where I paid for it out of reserves this time and then paid for it last time, it'd still be one tranche, right? It wouldn't be... multiple times.
What I said is if you felt like you didn't want to pre-fund some of the dollars,
right,
then we talked about doing multiple tranches for the 7, a 5, and a 2, a 6, and 1, or whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, the Finance Committee talked about it, the 9, 29, or whatever scenarios that we talked about. This was the one that we felt was best for all the factors that we were tossed and we were looked at, that tossed our way and we looked at.
So I'm going to assume, correct me if I'm wrong, the benefit of this is just that we have certainty around the interest rate. It's attractive, and we feel that that interest rate would go in an opposite direction a year from now to be able to do that.
That's, yeah, and if it did...
We don't have a crystal ball, but that's the assumption.
Two things. One is, if you do it in multiple fundings, tranches, there's more fees.
And which we're not suggesting.
And we didn't feel that that was appropriate.
Right.
And then the second thing is, when you have a payment stream, an interest rate, an amortization, and your principal balance create a new payment stream that you have to make. Those are three factors. If you start holding back one, like the interest rate is uncertain in a year out, and it goes up too much, then you won't be able to borrow the limit that we want. Because there's only a certain payment that our budget can take each year.
Yeah.
Based on Bob's projections.
Yeah.
So there's governing factors that we said, given the uncertainty of the future and what we know today, this is the wisest decision to fund this amount. Because we may turn around and say, guess what? Interest rates went up 100 pips. The P&I payment's going to be X, you know, X plus Y. That Y now means we can only borrow $5 million, $4.2 million, whatever the number is. A lot of uncertainty with that because you don't know where interest rates are going.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would like to point out in this discussion, though, and I think we pointed out last time, but it deserves being pointed out again. In all this discussion, Bob brought MB in a couple times. We did negotiate with them, and they listened to us, and they did bring down the spread down to 60 basis points
from
75.
So what do you mean the spread?
The spread to the interest rate.
In layman's terms, that means...
So they just put 75 basis points on it.
That's what it originally was, and they presented to us way back when. Now
they went to 60.
They went to 60. Okay. So we got a reduction of 15 basis points.
With the ability to pay quarterly.
With the ability to pay quarterly, which then, once again, gives us savings from an interest cost standpoint. It doesn't necessarily make your payments different, but you're paying down principal quicker.
And I'm just asking out of curiosity, did anyone ask him that? Would you honor that? Well, I guess no. Never mind. I won't go there.
Okay.
I sat in on, I think, three of the conversations with finance because I wanted to hear your line of thought. And at one of the meetings with MB Financial, it was brought up, or I had asked Joe the question, how do we save any dollars if we can around prepayment, because they had built in, so there was cost built in for that. So there was some savings around that as well. And I only bring that up because that, along with the basis points, I really do think that initial, if you remember back to that first presentation between MB and William Blair. One of the issues or pluses that MB brought up is that we already have business with them and they would be willing to work with us. So I think that I want to thank the Finance Committee because I think you did a good job of pushing back and making sure that we got the best deal possible. I think what this does also is you know, and we've heard this at least over the years, you know, from folks who've weighed in on this, board members, administration, parents, community members, that that we're showing our desire to have somebody said this earlier, but skin in the game, and I think that's really important. And other referendums around locally that have not gone well, part of the pushback was that not enough was taken from the current reserves, and I think that we're doing a good job of trying to balance that out. I am concerned about interest rates going up. You know, the Fed has talked about starting to pull back on their pull back, so something's going to click in at some point. So, so that once we take action on this, should this pass, then we have 2 days to lock in. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, Bob, can I, we asked MB to get credit approval. Do
yeah,
you
we actually started. Yeah, right. Contacted by the underwriter today.
Okay, yeah. And they said it takes 2 weeks to do it.
They're starting that process.
Okay.
So that'll be available.
We're not trying to front run the vote. We just want them to be parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if this makes sense to you, Bob, but I guess I'd like to just understand, because if we're pre-funding, we're going to take $7 million that essentially we don't necessarily need till next year.
Right.
What's the cost of that year one? Not the cost. What's the what is the change in the interest rate need to occur that if we don't lock it in now, then, you know, if you were to tell me, okay, if the interest rate goes up 1 basis point, we're doomed.
1 basis point won't have an impact.
Of course not. Mm-hmm. But if it's, you know, if you tell me it's 300 basis points, then I would say, you know, maybe it's not worth it. So
in the last year, the 10-year has gone up over 100 basis points. So just so you know, the relative change in 12 months.
And we did pull the historical data on that. We did ask them for some sensitivity analysis mm-hmm. on that as well. But
I'd just like to know how many basis points it has to go up to justify okay. the extra funding for yeah. pre-funding.
Yeah, here's the more important question, John. I tried to articulate it. I probably didn't do a good job. What you have going on is if you wait and the interest rates do go up, you can Bob's projections are locked in. If you believe his projections, if that's what we're using as the basis for this recommendation, then you can only afford a certain payment.
Right.
So the real question that I think is very important is what is the amount then I can borrow if interest rates go up 50 basis points, 100 basis right. points?
And it may go to the point where I can only borrow $5 million.
Right.
Or $3 million.
Right. Yeah. Right. That to me, that gap, because then where do you get the money from? There's only one source. Now, instead of taking $7 million out of your fund balance, now you're taking $10 million.
Yeah.
And those are important. But interest rates move quickly, and if you look at the historic interest rates, where are we over the last 20 years? You know, we're very low. But in the last 12 months, the 10-year has been as low as 170-something. It's been as high as 306. And we're relatively correlated to the 10-year Treasury in the Muni Index that we're tied to.
And the rate of change of those differences is increasing.
Right.
The frequency, the volatility of those.
But that's 140 basis points. So the 10-year T-bill since 1992, from like 92 to 2006, was over 5 most of the time. We're right now at 275, just to give you a relative understanding of where the treasuries are to other historic treasuries in my adult life.
Well, it's clear to me that the Finance Committee has vetted this mm-hmm. as much as it possibly could be vetted. And I tend to agree with everything that has been said. What I would want to point out, of course, is that the $7 million in reserve funds, I'm assuming, didn't come out of thin air. With using the $7 million, it brought our reserves down to 25%, which our board policy tells us that we are mandated to have. So I think that's another little tidbit that mm-hmm. needs to be stated, mm-hmm. that we are right where we need to be in terms of our percentage of our reserves. And we are able to, with our standing, with our district standing, we're able to borrow this money at a rate that we feel, we meaning our administration feels, we can afford for the near future. And those factors to me make this a very attractive package. Anybody else?
I think that was a good summary.
Good summary. Yeah. Thank you for all your work.
Okay. The bid results for the elementary school additions. Thanks for staying.
Absolutely. Part of the deal. Working from the kind of 50,000 foot level on down, we went out to bid. We received bids on February 7th for the substantial portion of both the building and site at Franklin, the building and site at Lincoln, and the site utilities at Forest Glen. We received bids on February 7th for 22 bid packages, totaling about $4.6 million in estimated costs. We're recommending in the board packet for discussion award of 21 of those 22 bid packages. There's one of those that has enough discrepancies and is still open for discussion that we're not recommending at this time. And the bid packages as presented represent an award amount of about $4.4 million, which represents about a $200,000 savings that will be used for additional contingency until we award the rest of the work. The low bid trade contractors have all been met with. We scoped them all out. We reviewed the schedule. We reviewed their qualifications, their availability of personnel, and their bids are all responsive and responsible. And so we may have made awards to the low bidder in all 21 trade categories. We've also recommended the work of the alternate roofing at Lincoln, which is kind of outside the capital project and this whole funding conversation. It's a separate funding conversation, and that bid came in about $30,000 under the projected budget available for that work. And there's also a $50,000 state grant for maintenance grant for that work. So the net cost of the district is about
$144,000.
Yeah. So that's the big picture of the work. And any questions?
Well, the obvious question is the one bid packet that isn't.
Sure. The one that's not being recommended is a casework package, which essentially includes the movable cabinetry in the classrooms that gives the classroom the STEM portability and flexibility, the maximum flexibility. There were two bids, and they were about $35,000 apart. And when we met with the low bidder, he brought up a bunch of questions that the high bidder answered differently. So we have two completely different products, two different answers to the question. Neither one of the bids are really 100% compliance with the documents because there were some conflicts in the documents. And so as a result, and we also have some questions of administration that we still need to get answered in terms of the actual degree of flexibility that we're looking for. So, and it's not a critical path item. So we have the time to go back. Let's do it right. Let's get the questions answered. We have to go out to rebid, respec things. Go out to rebid. We have the time to do that.
Okay.
Real quickly. I said a substantial portion of the work at Franklin and Lincoln because there still are some miscellaneous items that we didn't go out for bid yet because they're so minor that we don't need them until October. That we'll be back for Franklin and Lincoln miscellaneous items probably late summer. Start a school year.
One thing we discussed in the finance committee is when you go through these bids, and it was one of my questions, comfort level of certain trades where you only have one or two bids.
That was going to be my question.
The one that Jack referred to as casework had two bids. So there's two that only have one bid, and then there's one other that has two bids. And we talked to Jack in detail about that, and his team was here, and what comfort level they had from their ground level and the weeds perspective, as we like to say up there. And he made us feel comfortable that this was a good recommendation.
So what my question was, we have two bids that only had one bid that came in.
Mm-hmm.
Is the amount in those bids what you would say is reasonable? One's for the waterproofing and the ceilings, the other one is the partition.
The partition wall.
Yeah.
So two different answers. The partition wall, absolutely. I think it's within about $500 to $1,000 of what we estimated that work to be.
Yeah,
so that was right on. The waterproofing is not. The waterproofing is higher than what we estimated. And so we've spent the last couple of days in preparation for tonight making sure we understood why. Mm-hmm. And the reason for it is that the budget that we put together on the 60% documents was based on a certain amount of coverage in terms of the, especially at Franklin, the retaining walls, the courtyards, mm-hmm. and the external surface area of that space, and doing it with more of an applied membrane product. The 100% construction documents, the quantity of coverage was significantly higher, mm-hmm. and it is a hot tar applied material with an insulation board that was a different system than what we anticipated that we saw at the 60% construction documents. Mm-hmm. So there is a budget difference between what we expected and what we're awarding, but we are confident that the award number for waterproofing is consistent with the final scope that was in the documents from a budget standpoint.
And then there were bids that had what you described as minor irregularities, or I think of two of them, maybe there were three. Typical to have it come in like that and have to deal with that face-to-face when the bids are open?
Yes, there's a couple of things that happen on bid day that are non-starters. If the bid form is not signed, mm-hmm. or there is not a bid bond, mm-hmm. we don't even read the bid. That is not acceptable. Yeah, but if there are other items, we ask for certifications, we ask for, which are, you know, no bid rigging and prevailing wage and so forth. We ask for a qualification statement, we ask for some financials from the bidders, we make sure that they have recognized that all addenda are received. And sometimes somebody misses a blank on a bid form, or they don't submit the package mm-hmm. With their qualifications, and we need to go back after the fact and make sure we have all that information before we make this recommendation. Okay. And those are the kind of minor irregularities that we tend to then look at and go, from our standpoint, these are minor irregularities, so we recommend to the board that you accept them. Mm-hmm. And move forward.
Last questions. Out of the bidders, how many, if any, of these companies have you worked with?
All but really one of them. Okay. The glass company, we haven't worked with as a firm. John Elnardo, who's the head of our construction, I've worked with them in a previous life. Mm-hmm. All the rest of them, either we have or the district has worked with them. Okay. Successful.
Yeah. Would assume that, but I'm glad you jotted that in. And then the difference with the bid, that contingency we're going to... you have recommended
right.
to pull over to have until we get this next amount.
Yeah, we have a, you know, as John was mentioning earlier, this is about a $4.4 million award recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of recommendations left to do before this is all bid out and we have everything locked and loaded. So there's still going to be variations, and we still have some questions on some of the details of the work at Forest Glen and Lincoln, or at Churchill, because those documents aren't completely done yet. So for your protection and the project's protection, let's keep that money as part of the project, because there might be other fluctuations we need to deal with until this is all done.
But glad to know we have.
We're in the right direction.
Yeah, the dollars
so
are
far.
To our advantage, yeah.
Yep.
Anything else from it for Jack?
I'd like to point some out we did in finance committee, so sorry for those who were here for that. But the Lincoln bid, Bob made a decision to have Jack and his team do that as opposed to going out and just doing it by the district itself. And from the budget to what is actually done, not taking the grant in consideration, there was a significant, more significantly under budget, is the way I should say that. So I thought that was a wise decision that Bob chose to do and saving this money. So mm-hmm. I think you'd see that. You would expect it with the economies of scale that you would get here, and you did. So that's important.
That's good.
Good. Thanks, Bob. Anything else? Okay. Let's move on. Thank you, Jack.
You're welcome.
This topic. The good results for the elementary school district. Did you have any questions? Any other questions? Okay. All right. So, Amendment 29 to the owner-architect agreement with FGM.
Bob, you want to give the opening to this piece?
So, earlier this year, I brought you a series of recommendations that were amendments to the existing master agreement that we have with FGM. This is another in a long line of amendments that we presented to the Finance Committee and to the Board over the past several years. And right now, this dollar figure that we're referring to here has to do with pre-construction bidding, design, and construction services related to the elementary additions that the board has been discussing now for several months. This is an item that we'll be budgeting over a number of years. Some of those expenses have been paid to date. Some will be budgeted for the next fiscal year, and even more dollars will be budgeted in the following fiscal year. But overall, we expect the fees associated with this, with these elementary school additions, to total approximately $985,000.
So some of this work has obviously already been done.
Oh yes, I mean that's why we're in a position now where we've been out to bid, and we'll be going out to bid again in summer, early fall, for the Churchill and the remainder of the Forest Glen work.
So, I mean, in your report, design, development, construction documents, competitive bidding, those things are already done.
Already been done.
Mm-hmm. And the contract administration is what's remaining?
During
or is
the construction.
During the construction process.
During the construction process for site visits, contract administration making sure that when vendors submit their request for pay, the architects review it, FQC reviews it, and ultimately they provide me with a recommendation that the fees should be paid or not paid. Mm-hmm.
So this was one of my questions, because you have underlined in the summary that we get for the duration of the construction project, so from now till when it's complete.
Yes.
Okay. And then it sounds, this was another question I had, I'm glad you mentioned this, that both your role, Jack, for FQC, but then also for FGM too, you're that filter with the construction on whether or not things are moving along, they're fulfilling their responsibilities as expected, et cetera, et cetera. So that was part of the contract that you signed in terms of your role. Has there ever been a time where you've recommended partial payment? There's been, you know, in other words, I'm asking, how do you protect the district?
The way, in terms of the payment to the trade contractors, the way that we manage that process is, well, you have two checks and balances. You have our review of their pay request, and you've got the architect's review of their pay request. Mm-hmm. And both of us look at the work in place to make sure that it's consistent with what they're requesting that month. As part of that request, you have an automatic retention. You have a 10% retention. So if they do $50,000 worth of work that month, you're only going to pay them $45,000. So you're going to keep 10% of the value of that work until the very end of the job, until the job is substantially complete. Mm-hmm. Then we reduce that to 5. So you still have 5% of their money until they're completely done and you have their warranty and you've probably occupied the school for 6 months, you still have 5% of the money. Okay. So that's one way. The other way is we always, when we pay, we want to make sure that the value of the work remaining is at least as large as what it would take to get somebody else to finish that work if that contractor went belly up or the bank. I mean, we've run into situations where the bank came in and shut the business down, and they had no idea it was coming, and the next day we had to go find somebody else to do the plumbing for that contract. Mm-hmm. So from the district standpoint, you have our judgment that the work remains, that the money remaining in the job is going to be at least enough to finish the work of the contract.
That is my concern, only in part because I'm working with a client right now that's a construction client, and some of the case study we've been going through has been that a subcontractor pulled out and they didn't leave enough in that percentage in order to do that. So it caused me to, you know,
think
about that.
It's a very, very good question. It's really dangerous. You, because of the contract structure we're working under that the district chose, you also have a performance payment plan for all of these trade contracts.
Okay.
So that's another insurance level of protection.
Thank you.
Just a clarification point on the construction documents that the architect has completed. Lincoln, Ben Franklin, they haven't completed Forest Glen.
No, or Churchill.
Or Churchill. Just somebody said they did all four.
Yeah, but that's,
I just want to make sure that everybody knows that they only done two or four. Okay.
Sorry, the architects have only done two. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, just so we're all.
Yep. Because it was a
clarification.
It was a clarification point.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Anything else?
Thank you. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks again. All right, our last item.
The school calendar.
2014-15 proposed school calendar.
Very similar to our current calendar.
Yeah, the calendar committee met, was it last week or?
So bad with dates right now, I'm lucky to know.
Not long ago.
Thursday today.
And I was a part of that committee, Paul's part of the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers, AFSCME, GIA,
and other administrators. And board.
Julie Worthen. And the principles that were used and are always used, and I'll read from the report. Three guiding principles assist the committee in its work, developing as many five-day weeks as possible, given multiple holidays throughout the school year, application of standards for best practices in professional development, and the recognition of the importance of ongoing evaluation of school improvement work. The other thing I will mention is the calendar mirrors the 87, District 87 calendar. So for those folks with kids in both districts, we tried to make it as easy as possible. There was some discussion about the parent-teacher conferences.
Yep. Having another one in the spring.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, Carrie, the GIA rep went back to GIA with some suggestions from the committee, and at the end of the day, it was decided that we're just going to leave the schedule the way it is in terms of the parent-teacher conferences. Because the GIA was worried about working a full day and then having...
the evening conferences right after. It is a long day. But they want to see it for one more year. The impact, the parents, from the feedback that we received from the parents was very positive. They like more evening opportunities, and we were able to accommodate that this year.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that we ended up with basically the same mm-hmm. calendar as last year, and as I said before, the same calendar as 87. So, any questions?
Well, I did count on the five-day weeks, and again, there's parity, and that was something over the last really 3 years we've been working hard to leverage more. This is a SIP day question, but it ties in, Paul, to the planning that's been going on mm-hmm. in terms of pooling. And the SIP piece through the professional development team is given to teachers to determine how they want to use some of that time. So they make a recommendation mm-hmm. that's signed off by the principal. So
correct.
We know that process. Is there, this is a thought I want to layer as you work with PDT and Lori, and that is as we think of more of the planning that we're doing, how might we use within the calendar some of those SIP days? I still think there's a lack of understanding of how those are used and the value of those for teachers, mm-hmm. collaboration time, you know, level time, grades and levels across the district, you know, that piece. But how might we talk about using SIP days for some of that plan
time? Mm-hmm. We're talking about it quite a bit. How do we leverage institute days? How do we leverage SIP days? Mm-hmm. All of those pieces. So we'll be going to PDE team in the very near future to really lay those pieces out for the entire year. Planning will be critical.
It's a worthwhile conversation.
Absolutely.
Especially coming into this year where, you know, you have a different planning model.
Yeah.
And that's been, you know, well received by the teachers. How do we use the calendar wisely around that time?
That is a big focus for us.
Okay, good.
One thing I just like to suggest that with our construction projects potentially going on over the next 20 so many months, it doesn't impact this schedule because you're going to have projects at the starting in the spring, going through the beginning of the year, and then one starting in the spring the next year. But there should be some consideration looking at that construction schedule for the following calendar year, because if we do approve the additions and Churchill and Forest Glen start in the spring, as is on schedule, potentially on schedule now, that perhaps you want to start later to give a little more time for those eight new classrooms to be ready. So I'm looking forward to, with that comment into the school year of 2015-2016.
Well, one of the pieces that we're looking at is for the calendar committee to come back together again this spring to talk about long-range planning for the calendar, because we know it's really important for our parents and the community to know if you're going to make a change, you need to make sure that change is probably 2 years down the road, because some parents are scheduling vacations out rather early. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure that the community is aware of that. So we are going to be coming back together this spring to look at the further calendar.
Sam, for the discussion on the conferences, are these, I'm out of loop on this, but are these the same as, they're not the same as District 87, are they?
I don't know. The days are the same, but I don't know if the actual timing is the same.
I don't think it is. I think the parent teacher conferences are different.
Okay.
But we'll check. We'll make sure we.
Yeah. Just a caution. Because I know we have some families with children at the elementary level, junior high, and high school. And that's. I know teachers make accommodation for that. But
87's calendar has, if I'm reading it correctly, parent teacher conferences Wednesday, November 5th. Thursday, November 6th, and has a non-attendance day on Friday the 7th.
So they're
in our
calendar, that's for 2014-15?
That's 2014-15.
So they are exactly the same?
Yeah. The only difference is they don't, it doesn't show any parent-teacher conferences on the 7th, just a non-attendance day. But in contrast, our schedule has parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah. There's not been a hue and cry around that. People make, you make it work.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's food for thought. What has helped this year is that we went to an electronic scheduling. So as soon as parents were able to get in on that, they could kind of navigate that based on their other conferences. But it might be a good heads up to our parent community to say, FYI, they're matched up again like this year, so prepare.
Okay. Any other comments? Or?
Was there a board member? Pardon? So you were.
I was the board member.
The board member and president.
I think you volunteered.
I did volunteer.
Yeah.
For some reason.
It's a good group.
Because you want that Halloween off.
But I did. It turns out that Halloween is on Friday this year, so we didn't have to fight that battle this year. But next year we'll have to fight it. Anything else on this? Okay. All the discussion items, the class size target recommendation, the 2014-15 student fee schedule, the 2014 elementary school facility funding, the good results for the elementary school addition, the Amendment 29 to the owner-architect agreement, and the 2014-15 proposed school calendar will be back for action by the board at the March 10, 2014 meeting. Action means for a vote, just so we're all clear with what is going to happen. Okay, moving on. Upcoming meetings. February 26, 2014, special board meeting. That's 2 days from now. Here at the Central Services Office, 7:30 p.m. March 10, 2014, regular meeting, 7:30 p.m., also here at the Central Services Office. And March 24, 2014, a regular meeting, 7:30 p.m., also here at the Central Services Office. Other matters. Are there any other matters to be considered?
Go ahead, John. No, it's just
John,
next
go,
to Sam.
John, go first.
Just, I don't know if you're getting, well, I know you're not getting my emails, but I'm tentative for Wednesday. That's the way I responded, but I didn't know.
Was Mike able to,
he's gonna work
connecting?
He's going to work something out, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Since you brought up that we're voting next week, I just going to re-ask my board members to think about, at least where I'm coming from, on the portables, right? I brought this up probably been for the last 6 months, but I still, curriculum comes first for me, so I understand I'm not as passionate as everyone else around this, but and I'm glad we're eliminating portables, and I understand that they will fit, you know, from a curriculum perspective in terms of STEAM and flexibility and all that. But obviously the goal for me would be to get rid of all of them. And I'm still concerned that, ideally I would prefer to go with phase one and two together, get the referendum. And I don't want to hold anything up. So, I would still be okay with doing the Ben Franklin and the Lincoln so that we're not slowing things down because, you know, as people have pointed out, you know, we haven't eliminated them, and we need to. So I don't want to slow things down. But I do feel, with the timing of this, if we don't get a full package out with a referendum, that we are setting ourselves up to get rid of, you know, according to my math, get rid of the 14 portables, I guess it would be, with 8 left in the K-5, and then the 10 at Hadley. And a referendum around getting rid of, you know, 8 portables at K-5, when 2 of the schools will have none, in theory, a new building or new facility will be extremely hard to pass, as it will just lessen the need for our constituents to support it. So, I'm concerned that it's going to be, we're going to do this, we'll get it done, and then the rest of it will just sit there and we won't be able to pass it. I think we would show great faith to the community if we, and I need to understand the difference in the basis points, but if we just paid for this round out of our budget and went to referendum in time, November, okay, I know it's fast, put the package out there to say, here's what we're going to do, and here's why we need your support. I think that would be a greater likelihood of passing. And then at the end of the day, if it...
You mean this November?
Or March, I guess.
We do March.
March. Yeah, March. I'm sorry.
No, I mean
yeah.
This March.
Well, yeah, but you guys would never do that. So, no, but you're right. It could be
November.
It could be next March because we would we'd still be able to approve part two of phase one and done with the community.
Just a note, though, just so you know, on the bids and all that Jack talked about today, you have intertwined into those bids. Are things going on at the other two schools?
Mm-hmm. There's the stormwater thing that's going on.
Right. And you have
well, I wouldn't slow that down.
You have soil savings and all that, mm-hmm. that by taking it from your excavation and moving into other sites. So it would, if you didn't pass the second phase in your scenario, you'd have to then unwind all those things, not necessarily the underground at Forest Glen, but there's other impacts going on.
What would you have to unwind?
You have soils that you're importing into Churchill. There's significant savings that you can see in the recommendation that you got. We're talking more than $1, so you have over pretty much the savings you saw on the budget.
Why would I have to stop that?
Well, what are you going to? You're going to have to unwind it. You're going to have to go take it somewhere.
You're saying if the referendum doesn't pass.
Correct.
Well, but what I'm saying is, what I keep trying to articulate is, I think we would get more people behind us if they knew the entire And
no, I understood that. I'm
right.
just saying.
I'm not saying, and we could communicate this. If the community came back and said, no, we're not, you know, funding another school is not an option, and
right.
not willing to get rid of the rest of the portables, we still know we have the funds to do what we need to do at Churchill and Lincoln.
Then I don't see the difference between what we're doing in that statement from a leverage standpoint.
Well, I've explained it to you a couple times, so I'm just not a good communicator.
No, I don't.
All right, well, let's not. We don't need
I think on that point we disagree, because once you've told the public you're going to do that and you let bids that this is what's going on, then you've lost the leverage to say, you know, you're still going to do it, even if they vote no.
So why would anybody vote yes if they know you're going to?
Because you're telling them what you're going to do, and you're telling them in complete, you know, transparency with a package, with something they can better understand.
Well, you can show them the package after the fact, too, then in that case, and then you're still at the same point.
So I would ask you guys to consider that as an option.
Thank you,
and okay. really what it requires, I think, from us as a board, is that we decide to move faster on the phase, completing the definition of phase two with a referendum potentially in March.
I think moving faster is a wise decision. I concur with that. And also, just as a point of note, I think it's last week we had one of those high wind days where all our portables were moved inside. So I think the significant reduction of the portables, which is what the plan that's on the table, is a wise decision and one that
I don't disagree. A significant reduction is a good thing.
No, I'm not debating with you. I'm just stating for the public to understand what I'm, and the other board members. That wasn't a debate. That was just a fact.
John, thank you for stating again your position. I think it's important to hear it. You know, we had last night late, today two emails, and then a third one right before, you know, like around dinner time or so. And you know, I want to acknowledge the emails, and as I was reading through them, I mean, I wanted to codify in my head why I felt I wanted to just close with this, because, you know, because we've had a lot of comment from the public that there's not been conversation, not enough, et cetera, and I would disagree with that. But there was one thing in the emails that came to light for me, maybe in a different way, at least the three, and then the fourth one that came in later tonight, and that is, there is a shared agreement that portable classrooms are not the facility that we need. And John, you just said, you know, we've always talked about this. Program, educational programs drive facilities. And so we know that as we move forward, our educational programs can be looked at differently. Paul, you've talked about that, your vision for this. Joe just brought up, you know, one of the things that made me think about this and in terms of this kind of shared or common ground, and that is people want these to be addressed in whatever way. The board is looking at addressing it in this phase-in process. It was safety. We got another email reminder, although, Paul, you had already told us about this, that there was a light in one of the Lincoln portables where they had to do some removal of kids. I mean, the other thing, and we haven't even talked about this, but the temperatures this year are so wholly different in terms of how cold it is with kids walking from building to building that I just think that is another piece of this that from a safety standpoint is really important. So I don't disagree, John. If I could wave a magic wand and we could have everything done, that would be great. I do believe that we have to show diligence from a board financially, which our finance committee has done, but also the board saying, you know, we're hearing temporary classrooms, which by law we need to get rid of. We need to start getting rid of these. My crystal ball, if you're looking at yours, would suggest that as people see the change, that there'll be a renewed recognition and identification that these temporary classrooms are really temporary classrooms. So,
And I hope you're right.
Yeah, and I hope I am too. But we don't have a crystal ball, so we have to do what we've been talking about, and that term of under one roof is from the 2008 Master Facility Planning Committee, which you served on. So we know that this conversation's been on. So I just wanted to acknowledge those emails. I thought they were important. I read them several times so that I could say, what's the theme here? And it's move forward. The process is in disagreement. I get that. But there's that message. And I think it's important also to note that as we move into phase two, and I would like to see an increased, you know, movement for that, and I think this board has the wherewithal to do it, is to get those voices on board and help educate the community. We, you know, this is, we've always said this is not a, that the board has the background and is responsible for doing the, you know, the knowledge behind it and has been around in this conversation like many community members have. But, you know, we need that energy around that next step that you're talking about, John, and that we're seeing it maybe different ways, but we know it's there. End result, the outcome is the same. We want to remove them, get kids under one roof, and expand educational programs as we've been talking about. So I'm glad you brought it up, and thanks for restating your position.
It's a last word.
I don't believe
my,
that.
My concern is we do not get rid of all the portables. We will end up having the other ones because
I hope not. It should certainly be the goal of this board to not let that happen.
Last word.
Well, John, I think it's a fair statement then. If a referendum is not successful, then we obviously will not get rid of all the portables. I don't know if there's any other way around that. And to think that we can without it, without, you know, again, building up our reserves and then doing the same plan again, I just don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other option would be to do it, to say we're not building another school, but we're going to go for a referendum to get rid of all the portables without building.
Maybe that's part of the phase two discussion.
Yeah.
That's where it goes.
Let's push that forward. I mean, we have one of the emails we got. It says, get rid of all the portables at Lincoln. I've heard the same thing from Churchill. Why are we still going to have portables? And, you know, we've talked about that. It is a concern. So, you know, but we're in a position now to start something. Well, and
that's why understanding phase two is important, right? If you guys said, hey, we don't need another building, which is not what we said at our last workshop, then that might have a greater likelihood of a referendum passing. But that's not what we all agreed in our last workshop around phase two.
Still more conversation to be done. We've got to...
No, we're in discussion mode. We're not in finalization of plans mode. So, I mean, that's...
Let's keep discussing for another couple of years.
Well, that's why we're moving forward. Make sure we have another special meeting.
I think we've had more.
That was a good way to end it, John, because I agree with that. Because we're going to get 16 classrooms down to
it. Right.
I would venture a guess that if phase one is approved, then phase two will probably move forward on an accelerated basis. Mm-hmm. I would just tend to think that.
Can't get there until we know if we've gotten here.
We don't know until we know. Anything else? Any other matters? Okay. Public participation. Is anyone who would like to address the board at this time? Okay, you ready, Mrs. Clark? Give it a shot.
I'm going to say what I wanted to say at first, and then I'm going to add to it based on the discussion I just had. The first thing I wanted to say, what I just planned on saying, is that based on the discussion we had earlier on class size targets, I want to mention that we're moving forward with part of the think tank plan that is to align grades by level in preparation for MPH for all of our elementary grades. And I was told that we are now at kindergarten and first is going to be referred to level one, and also their class size target will be level one. Even though this part of the plan can't be done because we don't have all the kindergarten, and Think Tank recommended all the kindergarten. So I guess I'm wondering if that's the future, that we do want full-day kindergarten to go with our Think Tank plan. Why is that not being prioritized? Parents were told last spring that we had to rush to move forward with the entire Think Tank plan in its entirety. We couldn't take a part of it. We couldn't just do specialization. We had to do it all because our kids were falling behind. And if we didn't do it, we would fall further behind. There's an urgency about it. And so are our kindergarten and first graders going to continue to fall further and further behind if you prioritize elimination of portables but don't figure out a way to have full-day kindergarten sooner than 4 to 5 years and only if a referendum passes? So that was what I was going to say. I want to add that I agree wholeheartedly with what John Kenwood said. I know a lot of community voting members fear that a referendum is not going to pass the way you guys are going about it. And everybody does want to move forward. And to say that, that the letters that you're receiving are people want to move forward, that is one message. But what you didn't talk about here was the other messages that you're being sent, is that it's slow down, come up with a successful plan to get rid of all the potables. We talked about high winds being concerned with your plan. If you don't get a referendum passed, you're still going to have over half your potables out there. So are we only concerned about 14 of our potables, not the other 18 that are going to be left standing in high winds for 4 or 5 years if we get a referendum passed? I think that's really it. And as far as engaging the community, I know you've all heard this from me already, but going to PTA meetings with a final plan, and everyone there liking the plan, because people do, they want the portables gone, they want full-day kindergarten. But that is not community buy-in, it's not discussing the whole plan, it's not discussing the timeline. There's still confusion. As of last week, people thought we were having full-day kindergarten next year, and not kidding. So that is not community buy-in. And to say 100 people at PTA meetings think this is a great plan and mitigation community is not true. There's been no community forums. There's been no surveys. I was told we were going to have the listening tours before you guys voted to approve phase one on March 10th. Now the listening tours are moving to the middle of April, well after you're going to have approved to move forward. So I really don't even know what the purpose of the listening tours are when you've already done a community survey on 21st century learning, and we're already moving forward with the facilities plan.
That's time, Steph. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah. Mrs. Rand?
What she said. And then I was looking at the enrollment report from the date of January 31st, 2014, and this is where I got some of my numbers in my previous comments. And I have to tell you that I do appreciate you listening to my comments at the first public participation, because I do feel like it's been into consideration at your discretion tonight, and I appreciate that. But this enrollment report from the Finance and Facilities Committee that I got last week, I'm not sure how it's an enrollment report when some of the students have been counted twice. And then this is where I was getting some of my numbers. I understand, like, it has level one kindergarten, level one grade one, level two grade two, level two grade three. But then once we hit the combined grades, level 3 grade 4 science, level 3 grade 5 science. When we look at the numbers, there's 4 sections. We got a section of 20, 2 sections of 27, and then a section of 21. I'm not naive enough to believe that, you know, in a school that doesn't make AYP with limited physical space, that we're going to get down to 16 to 18 students like you were discussing. But at Lincoln here, there is a discrepancy of 7 students in class sections. At the other schools, the biggest discrepancy is 4 students, and that's when you pull out, you know, the special ed and the AEC kids. So, you know, of course, I just worry about the discrepancy, and I'm really, you know, from a teacher's point of view, I don't understand how the union tolerates that, and as a parent, you know, when you have a kid in the 27 instead of the 20, it's a little disconcerting. So I would like to see an enrollment report where the kids are only counted once and also their literacy classes are on here. I would like to compare numbers of literacy classes as well. And there's no information on here to do that. And then going back to the level 2, they only have 1 teacher, and I would like the comparison of how many kids are in your literacy class section and their math class section. Does that make sense? So, I'm confused by it.
Okay, I guess we'll try to have somebody straighten that out for you. Is that it? All right, anyone else?
Motion.
Okay. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined there is not a need to adjourn to closed session. So, may I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Kenwood, second by Mr. Ellis. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried, meeting adjourned. Time is 9:51.